August 1st. Welcome to another episode of the Machina Cast. And we're here because of Machina, to talk all things Machina. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's correct. And this episode had not enough of her. She was in like four frames, I counted. I'm very upset.
We missed you last week, Mike. Like, of all the weeks to skip.
Oh, I was... Well, like, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the cast, Craig, but I explained that it wasn't that I wasn't having technical difficulty. I was just in utter euphoria, and I couldn't bring myself to move for about an hour after the episode aired. Yeah.
So, as everyone probably picked up, also calling in from Sydney, we have...
Hey, it's Craig from the Repacked and Reanimated Podcasts. What's happening?
And joining us again from Canberra, we have...
It's Carice again. Hi.
Welcome back, Carice. And everyone will be happy to know that also back in Japan is the mysterious Venus himself.
Not quite in the right time zone, but getting there.
Welcome back, Egan. And last but not least, to my left, I have...
Second to last, but not least.
Who am I?
This is Adrian Lozano. Also known as Adrian Lozano. Throwing that in there for Renato.
Who couldn't be with us tonight. Yeah. And, of course, this is your host, Gwyn Campbell. We are here to talk about episode 18 of Macross Delta, which, Egan, is called what?
Put me on the spot, won't you?
Well, jet lag.
Hang on.
Yeah. I would say
give me a sec. I'll jump to the end. Hang on.
Give me a second. I'm pretty sure the official title is the follow-up episode to the best episode ever that featured Machina. Am I correct, Mike?
That's right. That's correct.
All right.
Sense emergence is what it says on the subtitles I've got.
You say that sense louder for me, Craig?
Sense emergence is the one that I've got it here.
Thank you. You are the honorary Venus for this episode now, Craig.
Goody.
I'm going to step in really quick. I'm just going to say, everybody, let's tone it down this episode. We got it all out last episode. So, Mike. Speaking specifically.
Mike wasn't on last episode.
I know. But... This time around, we're going to take it a little bit easier and talk about what's going on screen. A little bit.
Can we talk about the opening for... No, I'm just kidding.
And just before we get into it, I just want to point out that also today, the VF-31 Chogokin went on pre-orders. Pre-orders opened up. It goes on sale in December. I was keeping an eye on them. The online pre-order sold out in about 3 minutes from the ones I could see, which is nothing new. But it seems like there's a healthy demand there. Also, as Adrian mentioned last week, the Blu-rays are out, and I think anyone listening who purchased those, they've probably received them by this point. So I'm very interested to hear, you know, how people are finding them. The resolution alone looks amazing on those things. In the first 4 or 5 days, they sold 9,999 copies.
At the very least, according to Oricon. Oricon doesn't tabulate all the sales, so it's potentially even higher than that.
So it's one of the better selling discs so far this season.
Not quite Frontier level, but very few series are since then.
It is not 2008 any longer.
That's true.
Have they tweaked or modified the animation at all, like they do on some Blu-ray releases? Does anyone know?
The only big difference is there's an eye catch that changes on each episode that I've noticed.
Okay.
And I haven't actually really had time to watch mine yet.
A quick reminder for people who did buy the Blu-ray this Friday, or this, the end of this week is the last day to submit your concert ticket applications to hopefully get a ticket for the added concert that they're doing in September.
Yeah, and take it from somebody who constantly forgets to do these things, Egan.
Yes. Which is why I'm doing it.
Right, yeah, I mean, even, you know, the merchandise for the concert, they opened up pre-orders for the concert merchandise, right? So you can have it delivered to your home on the day of the concert, or you can pick it up at the venue. However, it was only for a limited time, and I woke up this morning to order my concert merch, and it finished last night. They claim they may reopen them again in the middle of the month, but, you know, we'll see. It's no big deal. You can pick them up on the day regardless, but...
There'll be lines.
There'll be a lot of lines. But anyways, let's get into this episode. Adrian, do you want to tell me what we saw this week?
Oh, yes. Craig, what was the title again?
Sense Emergence, I think is what it came up as a... As in the subs, anyway.
Emergence in Japanese, yeah.
Well, we're back on Voldor, and this time it took a little bit more effort than the first time, which we kind of covered in the past. And the things that have changed is not just the protoculture runes that have kind of appeared on top with that kind of structure that appeared on top of it,
mm-hmm.
but it is also changing the planet. Like, the actual environment is changing and the weather is changing. So they're arriving, and the last time they're there, it's like bright and sunny and everyone's out, and it's just this gloomy rain season. And they're even saying that a percentage of the planet's landscape has changed to a degree, but they're still going to go off of the previous mapping they had to fulfill this mission,
right?
And
even what they're wearing, I had an immediate, and you might at least know the opening, Adrian, because you probably haven't seen this OVA, but Gundam 08MS, we have the everyone in the rain gear. That's the immediate kind of image I had when I saw, you see Hayato and Freya in the, what do you call them, ponchos?
Yeah.
The rain ponchos, but anyways.
Yeah, and it's kind of, like, all the characters are in the actual same mood as the setting of the planet. Like, this planet itself is depressed, and the characters are all depressed about what they have to do. And the first thing is Kaname is reminiscing about the last time they're there, Messer was with them. And that's almost like the first sign you get where Kaname is starting to rethink what she's involved with. Like, what she's in, like what she's gotten herself into and whether she agrees with everything or not. And then it switches off to, who's with who, and Mirage and Mikumo's together. And even Mirage is kind of making, the observation that, hey, Mikumo, you haven't run off yet. That's kind of peculiar. She's like, yeah, that's true.
Actually, it's interesting. The subtitle says, you haven't disappeared yet. And I was like, yes, because usually she just, pop, and she's gone. Yeah. So, almost like she can just move around.
She's not a vapor trail.
Never said she was.
But just, saying the fact that she just didn't disappear, especially on her, which is kind of another... They're like raising flags, almost, for each character. Like, it's a turning point, it seems.
There's also been a bit of the aerial knights that were folded in above atmosphere.
Yeah, they were let... But, from last week's episode, it was the return of,
What's that, Father...
Laranzabal? The father of the two Voldorian children that were trying to sing.
Yeah.
So Alberto. Alberto Larazabal.
Yes, he's back, and he's
back. That's a great name.
Sounds like Char Larazabal. What's his name?
Aznable?
Yeah,
Char Aznoble or something? Yeah.
So we got him as a returning character on the Delta side. So I guess after you've been...
Although he's not in this episode. Oh, he is, isn't he? He's on a communication screen once.
Yeah, and they actually address him by his name. So, and his name and his rank. So, he's there helping out. And, the Windermerians, they basically fold into orbit. But it seems like they're not really out to attack Delta flight. They're actually there to kind of put their pawns in position, more or less.
Did they know Delta was there? I couldn't tell.
It seemed like... They already had a team of researchers setting something up with a bunch of sensory things and kind of, dishes, some kind of, So either they were there at the same time to do something, or they knew. Or at least Roy knew what was happening.
Right, because didn't he just say something to the extent of, if the if the ruins start responding or activating, call back the aeronice to like get away from the planet.
Yeah, basically get everyone out of there.
And people are like, well, what do you think is going to happen? You know, this is a planet full of... Well, it was originally an ally before we kind of brainwashed them. You know, what's going on? And he's kind of trying to deflect it, say, oh, you know, just in the worst case scenario.
Cautionary measure kind of thing. And Kashim just ain't buying it.
Yeah, Kashim went up so many notches just in this episode. Like, he had a great episode.
He's
yeah.
such a good T-Hawk.
Yes, he is.
Coming from the second, was it second episode was his appearance, right? Then it's just, everyone said, who's that guy? Looks like T-Hawk.
Yeah. But in this one, he had some pretty good fighting moves.
Yeah. And he's had dialogue, very, very, very small dialogue up until now, because they've already, he had spoken to Freya before from a distance, saying how his family was harvesting apple farmers.
Right.
How he lost everything because of the war.
Mm-hmm.
So his reasons for the things that are going on in his life and his participation in the war.
But when you say he's not having any of it, I do like the fact that, you know, he's not buying this plan. And Bogue notices and he's like, what, you don't trust, you know, Heinz's plan? Well, in that case, you're not an aerial knight. You get out. And what happens? He gets out.
Yeah.
I like Bogue says, some sacrifices must be made in a war. And I'm like, yeah, it's funny how people who say that are never the ones who do the sacrificing. T-Hawk's... Now you got me doing it. What's his name again?
Kashim.
Kashim's point was like, you know, we're supposed to be, if we're supposed to be helping and freeing these people, you know, now we're potentially blowing them up. And Bogue's like, eh, blow them up.
Something I noticed too, that they kind of made like allusions to, is that both Kashim or Kashim or whatever and Herman, you could tell that they're kind of like, I don't know if it's because they're older or more mature, but they're starting to have questions and have reservations about what the Windermerians are doing, which is cool.
I like that they're not just these. Not the last will of the king truly is what Royd has been telling them all before they started on this grand destiny to take over the galaxy. Is that true?
Right.
What the previous king wanted to happen?
Right.
I definitely think the older aerial knights are by far the most interesting. Royd, unless it's a sudden surprise, is all too obviously the bad guy at this point. Bogue is a caricature, and Keith is Fujoshi bait. So
the twins are more or less non-existent as characters.
I was going to say, oh yeah, they're there as well, aren't they? So you kind of, yeah, you put that well.
They have names, Theo and Zal. So.
And we get to see them naked, but we'll get to that.
But in that very scene, after Kashim walks away, and of course it's Bogue basically just running in his mouth, Herman just sighs, like in the background, where in the past, every time Bogue basically has something to say, Herman kind of comes in and jokingly says something to kind of like criticize what he believes in, or just saying, hey, watch yourself. Or, you know, he says he always has kind something of surprised to say, and that this Herman... time he just looked down and basically just let out a big sigh.
I was kind of surprised he didn't have a comment. Even when Bogue's like, get out of the aerial nights. He's not even like, you know, you don't have the authority to tell someone to leave the room, let alone leave the knights. Like, you got nothing, man.
Yeah, I got the feeling it was just that Bogue had finally just stepped over the line and was like, this is beyond a joking matter.
Another thing that was kind of noticeable, too, just backing up just a little bit, was when... You mentioned that they all split up. It was obviously Hayate and Freya, and there's still some, like, you could tell there's tension there from the reveal last week of Hayate's father dropping the bomb, and like I don't know, at least that's what I picked up on. Like they're not really like it's like yeah. awkward, you know what I mean? And yep. it resolves pretty quickly towards the end, but like at the beginning, that's definitely still there. So it's not like they just glossed over this big revelation or anything like that, which I thought.
Kaname even brings it up, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah, she totally does.
Yeah, because earlier I had said they go back to her and how she's kind of rethinking her involvement in all this, and because before she didn't, in the previous episodes, she had said with Messer, she had questioned like Arid and Johnson's. Involvement in it, because she had no idea that they were keeping Messer in his position, even though he suffered from VAR, and that it was kept from her. And now she's questioning Arid about how he kept Hayate's father's identity hidden, and it wasn't in the actual profile that she had gave to him in the second episode when he asked for his profile.
Mm.
And just that it was he was a former New Spacey military soldier, and that he had died.
Yeah, I thought, you know, and she was like, you know, and he mentioned some line about, you know, when you get to large organizations, you know, there's things that are, you know, you need to keep hidden. And
yeah, all organizations have secrets.
And, you know, she said, well, wait, like, do you even you have things like that? And like, you could just kind of hear her voice break. Like, it was a really well-acted moment. It's like she's coming to see Arid as something different to what she's seen him as to date.
He says something like, every rug has something swept under it, is the way
it's termed. It's a jellyfish pun.
Every rug has a few secrets swept under them,
It's jellyfish. You got it right. Not every jellyfish. It says, whatever Japanese donut has underneath it.
Yeah, no, it's a jellyfish pun like all of his puns tend to be. Yeah.
But,
Hagoromo, isn't that, like, that's a Japanese thing. Hagoromo kurage. Hagoromo jellyfish. Isn't that, that, I can't remember what it's called, the rope in a certain story? There's a legend or something where what is it? I can't remember what it is. I should have looked it up.
Yeah.
Like there's a legend or myth or story where I think a nymph or something descends from heaven. I can't remember what she's called. And like somebody finds her clothes because she's taking a bath, and someone finds and hides her clothes and then doesn't return them, and he keeps on Earth. That's what Hagoromo is, I thought, but I don't know whether it's got anything to do with whatever that jellyfish name there. That's the first thing I thought when I heard that.
Alright, well, it was a part of some description, but definitely, I guess we'll have to translate properly at some point.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on. We find out, then Freya's nose picks up some apples. Now, it turns out that Kasim is having a bit of a barbecue for one. He's making, like, apple on a stick, because everything tastes better.
I was going to say, he's just cooking apples on a stick. It's the sweet smell of apple on a stick.
Everything tastes better on a stick. And, Freya comes across him, and he kind of half captures her, but he's not wearing his uniform. This is a really nice point. It's almost a very Gundam-ish thing, where he's not wearing his uniform. He's like, well, we're not really enemies until I put my uniform on.
Aha! Ron Burrell reference.
Yes.
Oh, now I get it. All that years of hating Gundam finally paid off.
There you go.
That's different to what he was saying. The subs on this one sound like they're really off, because the sub had it as, apparently I'm a knight no longer. And then later on, when Hayate shows up, he says something like, they cut to another shot of the jacket, and he says the sub was something like, I'm not a knight anymore, I'm no longer a knight, or something like that.
They cut to the jacket constantly just to show that he's not a knight while he's not wearing it, period. And whether or not he's going to put it back on, you don't really know until the end of that whole scene.
I mean, put it this way, I mean, an officer of the law can technically say, I'm off duty if he doesn't want to deal with something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what you guys are saying makes more sense. I'm just saying, like, the subs say, apparently I'm a knight no longer. That's a bit different to, I'm not a knight right now. Those are very different sentiments. So honestly, it's interesting that they got it so off.
Both of those sentences would be almost said the same way in Japanese. It's really picking hairs, straws, something. But we find out he comes from a village that's just a mountain away from where Freya was raised.
What was it?
And we
Kusudenru.
Extel. Because remember the apples were Extel apples?
Oh.
Yeah.
At one point, and then he came from Extel village, so... and he knows the mayor of Freya's village, and this is a really nice bonding kind of scene.
Yeah, so is that the same mayor that tried to marry off Freya? Or village...
Well, she said that was the village mayor, so would have been...
The village, yeah, so it would be, yeah.
And then she says... Now, I haven't seen the subtitles yet, but she says something about lemongrass something or other, too.
Oh, that's...
Lemongrass village.
Yeah.
Sounds Vietnamese. He says, "I'm Exeter." Hang on.
I think she says, "I'm from Lemongrass Village or something," right?
That's just on the other side of the hills.
She's from Ravenglass.
Ravenglass. Yeah.
Ravenglass. Ah, okay.
And then
Ravenglass, lemongrass. It's all the same.
And then he says, "Do you know old Gustav?" Then, and she says, "Yeah, that's the head of my village, essentially."
I'm from Hufflepuff, but that's just me.
But so it's a really nice bonding moment. Then
Kasim starts talking about how the guy who ran the her village head, Odd Gustav, constantly beat him in apple competitions. Like apparently they would have some sort of apple competition, and his were always at apple fairs. His were always like beating Kasim's, and then he started to laugh. And Freya does her creepy laugh, which I just love.
Yeah. So. The two of them basically being neighbors, so to speak, like probably from one county to the next, one county over.
Mm-hmm.
They're reminiscing about the officials they know. Not like neighbors, but probably official people that run around between. They have names within the counties.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I think it's Freya, is imitating. They're kind of like playing out a story about people they know, and it sounds like a screech. And that's when Hayate runs over to help her to find out what's going on.
But T-Hawk hits him with a heavy punch.
Yep.
He's telling a story about how someone proposed to someone else.
A character named Erica. Their story. And I think the story how they run off together. Which, you know, like... It's not really clear, but I mean, if you're going back towards the first episode and they're talking about the same guy that was trying to marry off Freya, it's probably a character. No, I'm just putting it to just guessing. It's probably a character they knew that, like Freya, ran off to do something or marry somebody she actually loved opposed to been arranged with.
So
that would be my guess going by the conversation.
The other line, and this might be reading too much into it, is he said during the story he says something like, if you won't marry, the guy said, if you won't marry me, I'll tear my rune off and kill myself. And I was like, oh, I wonder if something happens to their rune, it actually kills them. Like if it's a part of their anatomy that, like, without it, they die or something severe happens to it. Because, I mean, it's pretty clearly tied into their emotional state and into their culture very strongly.
There's some comment he makes when he's trying to convince Freya to go back to Windermere that, you know, the Windermereans can't live without the wind. And if that's the case...
Without the Windermerean wind.
Well, the point is their runes are their connection to the wind, right? So if they need the wind to live, it's like ripping your lungs out when you need oxygen, I guess.
Yeah.
But either way, Hayate turns up, gets subdued, they have a chat, and I think during all this, you know, Mikomor just decides she's going to sing by herself to activate the ruins, which sets off all kinds of alarms, is very much in character for her, and... When all this starts to happen, you know, Delta and Walkure, they're like, all right, we'll converge on Mikomor, let her keep singing. This is what we came here to do, even though this isn't how we plan to do it. And Hayate runs off and exchanges names with Kasim. And Kasim obviously reacts when he hears Hayate.
Gentlemen. The other part of that I liked was that Kasim is like, he has a six-year-old son at home.
Uh-huh.
And he says that, like, when I was six, I got my first tree, and 7 years later, my first apple tree, it bore fruit. And he said, I haven't given my son a tree yet, but even if I did, I would now not live to see him grow it. Like, I wouldn't live to see its first fruit. Mm-hmm. Because it would put him, like, he'd die of old age. And I was like, oh man, like that's hella tragic.
Yeah.
And Hayate says to him, like, he says, basically says, you know, something about not waste. I think he say to Freya, like, you've only got a little time, like, hanging out with earthlings isn't going to help, you know, isn't going to help you or do anything. And Hayate says, because you've got so little time, doesn't that mean you should use it, like, just live as much as you possibly can? And that kind of puts Kasim kind of falls silent for a minute on that.
Well, because what happened to the last character who Freya said that to? He got his ass shot through a cockpit canopy. So
the very next episode.
Exactly.
I don't know the Kasim necessarily. He's like, oh shit, a death flag up.
That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking.
By the way, I'm sorry, I know I just swore twice. I'm really bad at that.
Gun pods for everyone, Craig. So Mikamo's singing, and what happens?
Everyone basically, Valkyrie regroups on Mikamo to start singing along with her. And everyone gets in their Siegfrieds, and Hayate lifts up Freya up onto the stage, and all of a sudden Mirage is like, hurry up, we got stuff to do. And Hayate drops her off, flies up. Mirage looks up at Hayate flying away, looks back down at Freya for the first time with a not so positive look. Hmm. And the rivalry starts. Hmm. There.
Because before that, when Hayate and Freya were moving back to the ruins, mm-hmm. they'd obviously made up. Which I was immediately like, well, there goes Mirage's big in for the love triangle. Because I thought that because, you know, Freya was kind of estranged from him because of his father's actions, this would be Mirage's chance. But now they've made up within one episode. So Mirage is on the outside looking in again. But
well, before she was on the outside, but she's kind of more accepting of her role.
Hmm.
But in that shot, it's just she's basically looking like typical you know, kind of thing. And at that point, that's when the Mirians show up, and I thought it was really interesting that Vogue is now going at Ray Ray. Like Miria going after Max in the original SDF. like she's out to kill one specific person, because before it was always you earthling after, you know, he wanted right. something, he wanted basically to kill
Hayate. He spent 700 yen on her, man. He got nothing for it,
and now he feels basically, I don't know how you'd say it, Mike, I know you're better at these kind of words, what does he feel like? Like he's been soiled. I don't know.
He's blushing in that scene.
He was.
I mean, there's a lot of animosity there towards Reyna, but I it's like one of those. It goes back to, I think, when earlier when he would like be complaining about Valkyrie, and like Herman would say, "Hey, control your runes," and his runes are just going off, like, and then he gets all embarrassed, right? I think it's that same kind of reaction where he doesn't know what to think. He's just like, well, I think Valkyrie makes him overcome with emotion, and he hates it.
And I think the way you know his heart wasn't in it was they didn't reuse that same animation of him leaning forward in the cockpit.
That's correct. Yes. Yes, all new Angry Bug animation.
I also want to point out that before Freya started singing, we were getting Mikamore finally doing more of her solo version of Giraffe Blues, which we'd only heard a couple of lines of way back at the beginning of the series, and now we got like half of the song of just her. until everyone else joined in and ruined it. And damn, it was good.
And from there, everything goes south.
Everyone gets naked.
Well, I think it's a Trans Am drive from Gundam and just goes Super Saiyan immediately.
I was going to say, I think we almost need to tackle this by section, because if we try to jump around, it's going to be very confusing. So I almost feel like we should do, like, Hayate, then Mikimo, then whatever, like...
Okay.
Because Hayate and Freya... Well, okay, if I may, let us start there. So Freya starts singing and really gets into the groove, while Hayate... like, their connection starts up as it always has. And then, like, Reina is monitoring. She said they're really, really sinking. It's getting stronger and more and more in sync than ever.
Yeah. And Arad is hearing that, and his reaction is like, good, it's finally happening.
Right. If this was Evangelion, we'd be winning.
Yeah.
You know.
Keith, you know, is noticing that, you know, that Hayate's game has stepped up. Like, what is this win? But it's, which is his go-to line. But it's not just that. He's noticing that, you know, it's more intense this time. It's stronger this time. He's actually struggling a bit against Hayate, which is a first for him against basically anybody. I mean, even against Mesa. Like, Mesa was a challenge, but I never felt like Keith never seemed outmatched or scared while fighting Mesa, whereas here he started to seem a bit worried.
Did anybody else think that the whole, when they passed each other as well, like, I'm watching them fight and I'm like, this is a built-in commercial for Delta Scramble.
Well, it actually makes, Mike, the key illustration for Scramble make sense now, because it shows, you know, Hayate versus Keith on the...
That's exactly, the cover.
But when they passed each other... Oh, sorry. When they passed each other, to me it was a combination of, you know, A, it was replicating the initial shot in Episode 1 with Mesa and Keith.
I think it was the initial shot.
It also kind of looked a bit like the original teaser image, where it just showed the 31 against a kind of shadowed out Draken. It wasn't perfectly either, but it seemed to be. It was a nice throwback to each, I thought.
Yeah, but I did think it was because Tengen had shared that box art, and I'm like, boy, that looks just like the cover of that you know, promotional image. So anyway, sorry. Continue.
Freya is whipping the Valkyrie's ass with a trail of light. Is that the image? That's what I got.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that was supposed to show their connection quite, you know, being more intense. I thought it was interesting, though, that previously Hayate, you know, you get the whole, you know, like the cockpit disappears around him, like he's flying in a clear blue sky. That was not what was happening this time. He was kind of going a bit crazy. Freya seems to almost, like, zombie out a bit. Like, she kind of goes onto autopilot. Like, she's not really there at all.
No, she's not in control.
Yeah, but that happened after Hines got involved.
Right.
Because, Hayate was doing good against... Vogue, because Vogue was trying to shoot him down, and he started, like, you know, Wings of Farewelling, mm-hmm. let's call it that, where it was like the bullets were slowing down, he was just going right by them, and then when Hines joined in, and he was using that device, which is probably now up to 100%, because before it was always 60%, not ready yet, and this time, the fold amp was like this huge.
It was juicing.
Yeah,
it was juicing big time.
And
it was the crazy not happen until after that? Did it?
What was that?
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, I thought Freya zombied out before that, but you're right. No, it was after. It was after. What's his name?
Of everything in sync, and when Hines got in there, it not only just affected Hayate and Freya, but that's when everyone was going Kawamori mode and all their clothes were disappearing.
Naked Aeronauts for everyone.
Well,
Carice, what was your take on that?
Damn it. No, I actually wanted to say something just before that. I think Hayate actually zoned out quite a bit before that, like before Hines started singing, didn't he?
I think so.
So that was...
I think it was affecting him. He got to her concert, right? The previous
Goring Bar, because he...
Well, that didn't happen until later. Yeah, that's
true. No, that didn't happen until later. See, this is why I think we need to do this by character, because the Aerial Knights thing is a whole other thing.
Not when they're naked, it's not, but Carice, sorry, you were saying?
I don't know, I've just been thinking over the last few weeks that Hayate's been reacting really strongly to some negative emotions, it seems, from Freya. But I think the first time it happened when she was talking to Mikomo a few episodes back, I felt that he felt her loneliness. The second time, I was thinking he might have been feeling that she was insecure about how short she was living, especially since she was amongst humans, and she liked him, who was a human, and so he's going to live much longer than she is. And now this time, I don't really know, but it looks like another negative reaction, so I'm just wondering, like, what's he reacting to this time? That's what I was thinking in that scene. So, I don't know, anyone has any thoughts on that?
That makes sense.
But I wasn't sure if it's negative or positive. It's hard to get a read on if it was better for him to be under that influence that he was under in this episode or not. Kind of like Messer in that situation, similar situation.
Well, I think he... Like I said, he was Wings of Farewelling, not because of... not when he lost it, but they both went into the fight knowing they were singing for each other as well as everyone else. Mm-hmm. They said it to each other, like, I'm going to sing for everybody and for you.
And you.
I'm going to sing... Yeah. I'm going to protect everybody and you. So... And then there's a scene where Freya jumps in the air and she's all sparkly. But... So he went into the fight... You know, pretty much knowing what he was going to do and give it his all and be in sync.
Hmm.
Because Freya's already glowing as she's getting off the Valk. And so they're primed and ready.
And then when... So they kick in pretty much with super meters charged.
Yeah.
And then when Hines breaks in and starts doing his thing, that messes everything up because they are that strongly connected. And she's in tune with the ruins as well, I think. So when he starts affecting the ruins, that's affecting Freya. And she just seems to be taken over. Like, she's obviously not in control at that point. And that gets transmitted to Hayate, which then pretty much turned into what looked like the VAR. Did everyone else get that? Or
I think Freya VAR'd him. I think Freya is doing what Hines can do.
That dirty little...
And I think... But she's... Like, Hines is... I mean, I assume that on some level the intent of the singer... Because how... I mean, you don't see how they're controlling the hypnotized people. So it must be some sort of, like, thing embedded in whatever Hines sings. Like, it must be his intent is transmitted and then they all get, like, varred out and whatever. If that's the case, and if Freya is doing the same thing that Hines can do, then her focus would be on Hayate, because that's what it always is. Her focus is to keep him flying and for their connection to be stronger. So I think she vases? She gets him.
Right.
Unintentionally. We've seen that she's lost control, so she doesn't know she's doing it. But... she kind of overdrives him. And it's clear, like, the other thing was that I couldn't tell if it was an effect, like, you know, like, you see his chest kind of, like, really, like, swell, like, I wasn't sure if that was an effect or if he was, like, genuinely, like, something happened. Like, I always wondered if his necklace had broken or burst or something. Like, I wasn't sure. I don't know if that was an effect or not, though. And I watched it a few times. I still can't tell. But, yeah, I think she varred him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Definitely. Well, Messer, like, went Super Saiyan 4 in one episode while he was going up against Keith. Right. I mean, he totally, like, roided out.
True. Yeah. That's true.
And so to stop all this, Kaname trash tackles Freya, which means we are now in for a doujinshi with Kaname on top of Freya, I'm sure.
Fly me down.
What, you mean you want one without Mikomo in at night? My.
Don't give him ideas.
So then...
Stop every once in a while.
That stops the singing. Well, stops Freya singing, at least. And Hayate says her name and then passes out. And his 31 falls to the ground and crashes near the temple. I think he's fine, I think. And I'm sure that the fighter is recoverable.
I'm just looking at all these naked aerial knights. Hang on.
I'm just thinking about Hayate's carrying on the grand tradition of Macross pilots going back to Hikaru of crashing his fighter one after another.
The knights get all naked, like, I swear Bogue has Toriyama eyes right there. Those are Trunks eyes right there.
He looks more like Trunks there than he does on...
Than Trunks does in
Dragon Ball Super right now.
Because all the Aerial Knights, this is what surprised me. It seemed like Heinz's song at Max was affecting the Aerial Knights. Everyone except for Royd almost seemed like they were under control. Their eyes all glazed over, which was the importance of the naked scene, because that's the one scene see them all. That's where you see them all with their eyes glazed over. Look,
because of something else.
Because even look at Zhao and Teo, they're just like completely staring blankly, and all their rooms are going off.
Well, and if you notice Kasim too, he starts getting those scars like that Herman has, that King Grammia had. So I don't know what the significance of that is, other than the fact that if it's prematurely aging him,
I thought.
It's like the equivalent of liver spots, kind of, when you get older.
Plus he's bleeding from the mouth when this happens, and that's not explained.
Yeah.
That's what I couldn't figure out. Like, what is happening to Kasim? And he's the only one that's bleeding.
Well, I think this is what is going on is... Because at this point, there is not supposed to be within the atmosphere.
Yeah, they were told to pull out if there was a reaction.
Yeah, they were told to get out. But they're going.
But we don't know where they are. No, we only see Keith... Because Keith and the twins were in space. We see them fly down. We don't actually see the other three on a boat flying around.
Yeah, three of them fly down because Arad looks up and three fly down at him.
They're incoming.
But one of them is Keith. But one of them is Keith, and we know that Keith was on the ship.
Right, so it was.
So Keith, I thought that was
Keith and the twins came down because they were on standby, and the three who were on the surface were already there.
So they stayed around to fight.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're all being affected when they were told to get out if this happened. So Royd had some inkling that this would have this kind of effect on them.
And
this is
what's
Royd's got more than an inkling. This is all a part of Royd's plan.
Yeah, well, this is why I think it makes it easier to kind of go through the beats first and then.
Maybe you're right. I'm sorry
about stuff because then we're focusing just on two characters for 15 minutes. When we can kind of break it down later, because the one thing we're skipping is the effect it's having on 65% of Voldor and the reactions to, the people living on there. They're all almost zombified, similar to what happened in Macross City and Macross Plus. So they're not reacting to Var, but they're in like a comatose state. And just kind of looking up at the sky. And the only time that has happened in Macross is on Macross City and Macross Plus.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about that. I thought it was like an interference thing. Like, because of the Valkyr singing, it was like the Var, like before they were wandering around in a Var days. And this, they'd kind of frozen. Like a radio control car. And the signal gets interfered with, so it just stops.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. It's just, like, visually, it's just something
that hasn't
been seen in the series since the past.
I kind of like yours better.
What's that?
I like yours better. That's a much more interesting
Well, I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but if it does have something to do with it, then maybe Lady M is mute.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, do we want to... Are we up to... Are we comfortable with talking about the pink Mikumo in the room?
Oh.
Or is there something else we need to talk about first?
No. Freya gets tackles, eye shield style. And I threw that one out there for you, Mike.
Thanks, buddy.
And then everything stops. As we said, Hayate crashes, which he should survive because Isamu Dyson has gone through worse crashes and survived.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be in traction for a while, but he has...
A couple of times.
He survived. But then all of a sudden, when Freya gets tackled, she kind of goes, the camera goes into like her pupil and you kind of see all this stuff, and she's actually floating in water like Mikumo has done in the past in her flashbacks. So you actually see Freya in this kind of dark body of water.
It wasn't that,
was Mikumo? Freya.
That was
Mikumo.
No, that was
Mikumo. I thought it was
under the water, yeah. I thought.
I could be wrong. Let's roll the footage. Then I would have to say I was wrong.
Yeah, it's Mikumo.
It's Mikumo.
Let's see.
It's worth rolling the footage for that.
Oh, let's roll the footage. All
right, well, while this is happening, the ruins are going completely insane. They're overloading, and we get a flashback. First of all, we've got Mikumo looking like she's coming out of some kind of operation. There's a surgical lamp in the background, and what I'm presuming are doctors looking down at her.
Yeah, they're not wearing masks, which I thought they were at first.
Then we get...
I paused it and I couldn't see runes because I wondered if they were Windermerians, and they...
Just to check.
They may be, but I couldn't see any runes.
And she has no arm either, which is really interesting.
I thought it was
under
the water. Well, how are we going to...
Yeah, I think it's under the water.
It's just under the water. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where is this shot? We're sitting here watching.
There's also one of the sensor light bars across her boobs, which is also obscuring her arms and stuff. But
will it still be there on the Blu-ray release?
Yeah, it's her arms are definitely just under the water, and it is Mikumo, no question. But I mean, that's symbolic, right? Is that her remembering it? I wasn't sure if that was like the sky, flying in the sky naked. Like, that's not really what's happening. It's like a metaphor type thing. I thought this was a metaphor that she was sort of...
Oh, I was wrong.
Drowning.
Whoa!
Hey, okay. Mike, I'm actually recording this.
Dick, excellent. I'm just going to put that on. I'm going to put that on loop over and over again.
It's my new ringtone.
It's going to be my... I was going to say, it's my SMS tone.
Go back.
Go back. All right, go back. I'm backtracking here.
Just checking.
Just looking. Those who are listening,
nothing
do,
is
do
more fascinating on audio than watching other people watch video.
Oh, man. You know what would have gave it away? Not the ruins, but the cup size. I am wrong.
No, it is certainly not Machina.
exactly. It is not Machina.
There you go. You're correct on that.
Before the flashbacks kick in, too, like we said, the runes were going nuts, but they cut to the Elysium, and the crew saying that there's like giant fold portals opening up, and you see like the sort of the pinky orange circles of a fold jump.
Right, the ruins are just going nuts. Basically.
Well, those circles represent all the ruins that are within.
It's resonating with all the other ones. That's
and
right. I forgot.
That, it, the same thing is happening
to every other ruin
through
right.
those planets. Yeah, you know, at the same time. So what's going on there is going on at the other planets, aside from battle.
Yeah, they do. They do mention the other planets. You know, Al-Shahal, Randall, like every place that we've seen ruins before.
Or heard mentioned.
Yeah.
Right. So then when Mikumo has this flashback, and then she starts singing again and starts singing for real, and her singing aligns those portals into a straight line, which, because previously they said the ruins were going out of control, this appears to be how it's supposed to function with the portals for all the ruins combined, and we get this huge like shaft of light or energy going up into the sky, which just... Not really sure what it is at this point. The ruins all light up. But the best thing, of course, is that this causes a backlash through the system to Hines, who basically gets completely sexually harassed by Mikimo. Like, the poor kid gets butt naked in front of this giant woman's face.
Brother, you need to get laid so badly, because...
Like, look at this picture. Does this
every 5
Egan, does this remind you of Turn A Gundam, or does this remind you of Turn A? This is...
It reminds me of the end of Evangelion.
Oh, it does.
Evangelion.
Yeah.
Long standard tradition in
it's
anime.
It's like naked bodies...
Giant
like,
faces.
Giant faces that are like all... It looks like Aina Marie from...
Oh, sorry. Even a little bit of albino look about her.
Yeah, this poor kid's traumatized by what Mikumo's done here. But just, she does...
Just before she... Sorry, just before she starts singing, she says, Randajal Rom Mayan. I know someone
something
is...
and without... It's, an
well,
actual,
that's how it's subbed.
Well... Who cares? But without an actual script or
I do, that's
there's
how
who I'm. The hell knows what she said.
Well, the reason I mentioned it is that didn't someone say something about Mayan, like a weird thing with Mayan as part of it before?
Yeah,
like
the
Hines and King said it a long time ago.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Like, I knew that it'd come up somewhere. I don't know if it's the same phrase.
It is.
But it was something it was?
It is, yeah.
Ah, see, that's got me interested, too. All right, sorry, keep going. But I just thought that was worth bringing up.
The only thing that raised something... Okay, because of that line, and I don't know what she said, I do want to go back to Zero and see if that is a line out of Zero. That would be the only thing I would flag.
It's not that I recall, but it might be.
I don't think most people can recall that, but if it's...
Oh, I'd love Zero. I wish Zero...
If that's what she says.
Well, she sings, and she goes temporarily... civil, with the glowing kind of sphere of energy around her and floating without her gas jet cluster. And her song, apart from mind raping Hines, completely blows the top of these ruins, just when it looks like they're working correctly. And then
Before the Hines thing, there's something that lights up. What was that?
Her
I couldn't
hair. No?
No. Like, mm-hmm. You see the shot of the big beam of light in the sky, yeah. And then a bunch of blue energy surges off that and seems to, like, either go around or hits Keith or something. Keith interacts with it at some level. And then you get this shot of, like, a blue circle with a bunch of lights lighting up around it. Like, something's turning on.
That was the inside of the ruins, I thought, from an inside shot of them activating.
Okay, gotcha. All right, I couldn't figure out what that was. My bad.
So it seems like she successfully activated them the way they're supposed to be, and then blows the top of them off through the strength of her singing. But then you get this little thing in her chest seemingly goes pop, and she collapses. It's like she had a fold quartz embedded in her that went boom. She's burnt herself out, which, granted, is a recurring theme in several Valkyria songs, singing till you burn yourself out. And she just collapses.
So I had to admit, I thought that was just the shield, the energy sphere around her popping. I don't think that was something in her chest.
Well, no, if you look at it, like, she reacts to it. It goes pop, and then she collapses. So...
Yeah, but I thought that was, like, the shield, the energy shield ends... And then she falls down because it's gone.
Right. I took it to mean that whatever was giving her the power for the energy shield, which was a part of...
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, kind of burned true. Out.
And then she collapsed. I mean, I don't know. Carice, how did you take this scene? Because it caught me out of left field.
Which part of it? Like...
Just the
micro. I don't know. I didn't see that... pop that you just mentioned. Now I've seen it, but I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, I also thought it seemed better than Freya's reaction,
mm-hmm.
but as in, like, it seemed maybe that this was the way that the ruins were meant to work. But then this is something I've also thought since, I think, a much earlier episode when the ruins actually appeared. And I was thinking, if there's any link to Zero as well, then have the ruins appeared because there's a negative reaction from whatever protoculture thing is behind this. You know, as in, like, you're not happy with what all of these Earthlings and Windermerans are doing. And that's why the ruins appeared.
Because the bird human in Zero, wasn't it like a... It was a judgment thing, right? Like, and if she was, like... if she was negative and feeling like the world was, or whoever the speaker was feeling like the world was against them, then it was dark, but it could also be good if the world was good or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I got from that as well. So that's why I was thinking it could go either way in this series.
Yeah, it's
there to punish. Are the runes actually here to punish all of these people?
Right. Well, it could be, because it seems like there's one set of ruins on every planet which has a major type of humanoid population that was seeded by the protoculture. But, you know, after this happens, we get a new ending song and nothing but footage of Mikumo. Which leads me to ask a question. Is she dead?
No.
No?
No way.
Well, I think it's a... I don't know if this is a swerve or whatever, but when you get to the end of the song, you get to the teaser for the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
They show a scene, and it's basically all of Delta Flight and Walkure except for Hayate and Mikumo.
Yeah, I took that as they were around like hospital beds or.
But I'm like, oh, they did that to mess with people. Like, I'm like, because, you know, that obviously, hey, they're both not there. Hayate crashed. You know, he's not dead. But like, Hayate crashed and, you know, Mikumo, like, just passed out. Or, you know, so I'm like, and that's what I was thinking, too. Like, did they just kill her off? But yeah. I don't think she's dead. I do think she will be like in a coma or something like that. But I have my own thoughts on her, but I'll save that for when we're done.
Macross doesn't tend to leave deaths ambiguous. If someone is dead, it's usually pretty obvious that they're dead. Like, they don't tend to leave a, with the exception of the Frontier movies. I can't think of anywhere in any of the series where they do it.
See, my take on the scene was they're showing all these scenes through the ending of her as she's been to date. So, given that we'd seen her being operated on or something that seemed like that, and that something seemed to burst, my take on it is that when we see her again, she'll be a considerably different character.
And this is
the end of her as we knew her. But
there's new footage in this ending.
Mm-hmm.
There's one shot, which I think it's right at the very end, which is obviously her, like, she's got like some sort of outfit on and it's lit up. Like, it's a side on shot from all the flashbacks of her at the temple on Windermere,
mm-hmm.
which we've seen a few times. I agree that this is sort of memory shots of Mikumo, but I think there's definitely some new shots in here too. Because there's that one, and then the shot where she's floating in space, that one's interesting because it's a shot of her, like, you know, naked and curled up floating in space.
That one's from the episode right after episode 13, where she was kind of just floating in the ship after they leave Ragna.
Oh, because then it cuts back and you see her in the ship. Okay, I didn't remember that shot. Yeah. But, okay, it's right at the end. The shot I was talking about, right after you see her from... Like, you see the sort of the flashback we've seen of the Windermerian Temple and the long back shot of her singing in it. And then it cuts to, like, a side-on shot, and it's her in a white dress of some kind with, like, glowy runes all over her. Runes is probably a bad word in this series. Like, sigils all over her. You see that? It's right before a shot of her... There's a side-on shot of her singing right after that.
Well, sorry, in the
temple.
I'm not particularly zooming through that.
Okay.
The different spot in the episode, Greg. But, I mean, I remember there being at least three shots of her from the temple. It may be new. I'm not sure. But either way, the fact that they dedicated an entire ending to her, that's got to signify something. It's something big has changed, in my opinion.
Mm.
But, look, we've definitely been running for quite a while. Do you want to get to any final points that people have? Egan, was there anything?
I can sum up some notes that Lady S passed along.
Oh,
oh,
yeah.
The mysterious Lady S. All right.
Nice to hear Kaname actually mention Messer. After we got the flashback from the previous episode, she didn't say anything, but she kind of clarified that, yeah, she was thinking about Messer. And it's been a while since she mentioned Messer, has it?
Couple Well, she had a flashback to him last episode, yes, but she didn't say anything by name.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Naked Knights were interesting.
Oh, lady, yes.
Seeing Mikimo going to overdrive was super cool. Hayate crashing? Ow. Holy crap, Mikimo's ending was super cool.
Okay.
I want to know what her reaction is when she eventually sees Naked Aaron. She'll be like, ugh, gross, old guy.
I'm not going to make the obvious Naked Johnson joke here.
Oh, that was actually a good one, Glenn.
I'm recording Johnson this as well. That's my other new
reaction. Johnson had a couple of funny reaction shots. Like, all he did this week was react to stuff. It was pretty funny.
Right. Everything was obviously out of his control. Yeah, so this new ending we got, it was by someone I've never heard of. The new ending was called Love, Thunder, Grow by Stephen McNair, which is the second non-Japanese composed song in the show, because one of the new ones last week we forgot to pick up was done by Ramus Faber, who does the Platinum Jazz anime cover albums. He's been doing them for about, I want to say, since about 2009. I was actually asked to translate for him on TV once back just after the Yoko Kanno concert in 2009, but work prevented me from doing that, unfortunately. But he's been covering a lot of Macross-related songs for a while. It's really great to see him. He's been tweeting about it during the week.
Yeah, there's a lot of work preventing people from doing stuff.
Yeah, Lady S. True. Yeah, Lady S as well, unfortunately. But I thought that was interesting. But, Carice, overall, thoughts on the episode?
Probably the most information-dense one we've had so far. So, I don't know, I think I mentioned it before to you, like, I sat down to write 5 things and it ended up with about 10 or 11 things noted down.
What did you write?
Oh, most of the stuff we've discussed already, so it's all right. Like, I think we've covered pretty much everything, except a couple of things about the Aerial Knights, which I think you guys just don't really want to talk about, so that's okay.
Go. Yeah.
I mean, we've had our Machina day. You have your Aerial Knights day.
And if nothing else, Gwyn's really
kind of them. It's just there's so much negativity about them. I just go, okay, that's fine. I won't talk about that.
Well, no, like in what sense? Because I think the Aerial Knights are awesome.
Yeah, so do I.
I think half of them are. Half of them, not so much.
Well, yeah, the ones that are actual characters, they're great.
So like 2 of them.
Yeah, with that, like, and I did love the scene with Kasim and Freya. Like, that was great. Yeah, that was my favorite scene, the entire thing. But the other things I wrote down were to do with Royd and Keith. So I was like, yeah. One of them was like Royd being disappointed in the extent of Welcore's residence with the ruins. Like, that made it clear that he knew. They were going to try and do something and that he was looking out for it and he actually wanted to investigate that. And then the other one was Keith was worried for Hines. Like, I think that was obvious from his just one shot of him. Other than that, I think we kind of talked about everything I'd written down. So, except one last thing. I think I heard Ken, which is Borg's voice actor, doing some like additional role throughout the episode, and that was really distracting for me because it's kind of annoying.
Oh, when the person's all like, oh, it's resonating and this and that, yeah, this is going on, and you could totally tell his Bogues voice.
Yeah.
It's like watching every other anime and you hear Mihail, like, yes, the whole time. Like, that's Mihail's voice.
Yeah, I kind of had to stop watching a couple of other series because I was like, oh, God, I hear, like, Ken, and that's not good at the moment, so.
Yeah, because even, like, when you watch other shows and the voice actor for Alto does a different voice, you're like, oh, I think, yeah, that's got to be the voice actor for Alto.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, yeah, but when you hear Mihail voice actor, that's Mihail.
Yep, agreed 100%. Agreed 100%. So, Mike, any final thoughts on the episode?
We finally, I know Renato's been waiting for this. We finally got we got back to some dogfight action, which was nice. So we had a few episodes now since episode 13, which focused a lot on character development. And there wasn't really a lot of mecha battles or anything like that. So it was nice to get back to some dogfight and mecha stuff. Generally, then my thoughts on Mikumo. So I think she is obviously she's genetically engineered. You know, I didn't know she was like an android or a clone or what she was. And I'm guessing my thing is I think they wanted to make basically genetically recreate a protoculture being. So like make her she is what the protoculture was. Like, you know, they maybe they took samples of DNA from all over, you know, the humanoid, all the different humanoid species and made her or whatever. And then obviously they embedded something in her or gave her some kind of power that would make her react to Fold technology and Fold quartz and all the protoculture ruins. So why, I don't know. But I do think that that's my theory on her, is that she's like some kind of protoculture clone or genetically created protoculture being. That's what I'm going with for now with her. Other than that, yeah, I thought this is the, well, aside from the greatest episode in Macross history last week, as it relates to Delta, this was the best episode in a while. Just as far as, you know, plot development and stuff happening, you know, I really liked it. It's interesting because it does feel like that was what, episode 17?
18.
18, yeah. So we're getting close to the end, you know, which is crazy to say because it feels like it just started. Yes. But it definitely feels like we're going into like a final act of, okay, it's, you know, stuff starting to get serious now. And, you know, it just things are starting to feel more like pressing, I guess you could say. And like there's starting to be some consequences and, you know, like Kasim, we've got some good character development on the Aerial Knight side, which is great. So yeah, those are my thoughts on that.
Interesting, Craig.
Well, I definitely enjoyed the episode. I think it was great. I think overall, Kaname is becoming kind of my favorite character in the sense of being she's the most valued player. Like Kaname's she gets a lot of great moments throughout the series. She's always in the background in some ways, but with the exception of the Mesa episode. But I love Kaname's character and her part of the team, and this was another great episode for her. There's a lot of questions, a lot of mysteries. I don't agree with Mike. I think she is a protoculture. I think they woke her up like the chick in Macross 30. I think they found her in ruins on Windermere and woke her up, and that's what started them down this whole path.
Interesting.
And, I think she's definitely some sort of protoculture construct, whether she's a robot or an actual protoculture person or something. I don't know, but I still believe she's definitely of that era. She's some sort of super dimension creature,
or at least something. That's in better a than being a ghost, Craig.
I never said she was a ghost. I said she was like energy that she can disappear and reappear when she wants to, but I was wrong. The stuff with the knights was great. The stuff with T-Hawk. Kasim, I got it. Kasim. The stuff with Kasim was fantastic. He's the one. I wonder if he died, because like we were talking about the blood in his mouth and the sort of the rapid sort of aging. Assuming was Herman in that shot of all of the knights?
Yes, I believe he was.
Because it starts with Bogey. Yeah, hang on, I found it again. Oh, yeah, you're right. And then Kasim is the second one up, and he doesn't have blood coming out of his mouth at that point. Then it's Bogue, then the twins, and then it's a shot of Kasim with the blood coming out of his mouth and the scarring or whatever it is forming on him. Yeah, the All of that stuff is fascinating. I wonder if both Mikimo and Hines are, I don't want to say trapped, but I think they're going to be in a coma. I think they're going to be out of it for a little while because of whatever Mikimo did, like, sort of snapped Hines. Like, I think he's just dropped, and vice versa. I think they just bounced off each other and sort of sent each other into a coma of some sort. So I think she'll be out for a little while. Maybe either the episode or if the episode picks up days later, she will have been out for some time or something. Obviously, Hayata as well will have been injured. I'm really curious to know what happened at the end. The big energy beam into the sky. I agree she activated something in the ruins. What that is, I don't know. I'm ready and waiting for more. I wonder if they'll figure out what happened with Freya and Hayate, and there'll be a moment of like, well, you guys can't, like, you can't fight while she's singing. You just can't. It's going to kill you. I wonder if that's going to be a bit of an arc happening over the next few episodes. But a fun episode, a bit of action. They were definitely flying fighters. Actually, they transformed. I was very excited. The Draken transformed into its robot mode. Two of them did. In fact, Bogue did it, and then Keith did it. I was like, hey, they remember that they're transforming. That's fantastic.
Oh, and they all came into the shot in Gerwalk mode, right? Didn't they? No, that was the 31.
The 31s did. I think all the Drakens came down to fighter mode. So there's some okay action. I kind of want to see a bit more dogfighting that's less glowy fighter stuff and more cool dogfighting.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But yeah, overall, I'm digging it. Ready for the next one. Hmm. Let's go.
Adrian.
My theory with Mikimo is I don't do theories, so I'm going to skip that BS. And we'll see what happens when we get to it. And then we can talk about it. Episode is good. I agree with Mike. It's a nice attempt at dethroning last week's episode, but they failed miserably. But as far as Delta goes, it was good. Couple things that I noticed. The very minor thing is I believe it's the first time we actually got to see a Siegfried use the gun pod. Because it's been a mounted cannon, as far as I could remember.
No, doesn't he take it off in the asteroid fight?
He picks one up from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
I think it was from a downed 31A, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, but just see him going right into battle with his own.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And the two things I will say that aren't, one isn't really that important, is just that at the very ending of the song, or the ending, it actually opens up with another Macross Plus looking scene for when Isamu is under, you know, the spell of Sharon Apple, and you see all the clouds coming at him, like when he's basically flying to the ground, and where he's always like, Moto, Moto, and all that part. That's what it reminded me of. I'm not saying it's homage or anything to do with Plus, but it just, this was like from Plus. Now, I just noticed, I don't think something snapped in Mikimo. What it is in the scene before she falls to the ground, she's in this globe, like how you said, she's in this kind of energy sphere that's keeping her hovering above the ground in the shot. Before that happens, and then it goes to the ruins, and then the ruins explode, she's still in that bubble. And that little burst isn't coming from her. It's just that energy bubble.
That's what I think, too.
Blowing up. And then she falls to the ground because she's hovering in the air.
Hmm.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't think it's something inside
her. She may still be...
went out.
Yeah, she still may be, like, out in some sort of coma or something for a while. But I agree. I 100% agree with you on that. Yeah. I don't think anything popped in there.
Well, we shall see. I think it was interesting that Kaname did a very good Mikimo impression in this episode, in that she was the one who covered Freya and jumped on top of her, which is the first time anyone other than Mikimo had ever done that. And look, when the episode opened, it was certainly darker looking already. when Mikumo started singing at the ruins, and we got, well, it was a good version of Giraffe Blues, another version of Giraffe Blues, and the ending song sung as well, my initial impression was like, oh, well, things are going the same as they always go. How many ruin singing battles have we seen now? Are we really going back to the same old? And they did manage to completely pervert my expectations based on the series to date and not necessarily Macross in general. There'd been enough similar scenes to date that I thought I knew where it was going. You know, just like once Freya started powering Hayate up, you thought, well, we know where this is going, and it completely took a left turn. So I like the way they played with your expectations in this episode. Next episode, Egan, what is the name of the title? This is a tough translation.
Let's go with Eternal Songs. Yeah, I like that. I like the sound of that.
Eternal Songs. That's coming up next week. Also, hopefully next week we'll have another TV commercial for the PSP game, which we got this week. The same basic commercial with different vocals over the top. I must say, just very briefly, I thought it was odd that they were using the second opening for the show for a commercial for a game which covers only episodes 1 to episode 13. However, I went to the official website, and the special edition of the game does include the new opening as well as the original opening. So.
That's right. A number of songs that, I guess because of music rights, it's easier to sell a separate version so you can get them
There's
for a higher price. There's
30 more songs in the limited edition, and most of them aren't, a lot of them aren't listed yet. And I think given that Bastila's Fire Valkyrie is in the key visual art, the ones they haven't announced yet will probably be Fire Bomber songs.
They specifically mentioned that we'll be able to play as, you know, characters from the past in this game.
Right, but that's a discussion for another time. So, Carice, where can people find you?
Easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Carice67. And yeah, I'll post, I haven't done this week's radio, sorry, but I'll post that summary when it's done.
Okay. Craig?
Now that you can find me on the Repacked and Reanimated podcasts, and you will soon be able to find me in Japan.
And by the way, Craig, I think you had a special guest on that podcast recently. I heard he was a real pain in the butt.
No, he was great. He was great. No, it's always great having Vince on. But Adrian came as well, and that was also cool.
All right, is that one up yet?
Yeah. Actually, no. That'll probably go up. What day is it? Monday. Probably go up tonight or tomorrow. Like tonight, for Vince is in Canada,
right?
So he'll probably put it up tonight, like while we all sleep.
Okay.
That's usually the way that one goes up. The first part, the part about San Diego Comic-Con and the tour reviews for that are up.
Okay.
And next Saturday we record our next Reanimated, which will be about the first four or five episodes of 32 odd shows this season.
All right.
I think that's what I watched.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, at Mike in Redlands. Thanks for everybody that reacted to... I got some really cool responses on Twitter from my my takeover of the podcast last week. So thanks, as always, to everybody out there. Thanks to you guys for humoring me. So you can find me on Twitter, at Mike in Redlands.
Okay.
Thanks.
And the mysterious Venus Egan can be found on this podcast when he's in the country or not in the country, although I think he's in the country for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I'm usually in some country or another. Yeah.
Adrian.
As the plot requires.
Yeah. As the plot requires, yeah. You can find me on Twitter. Handle name is at GiantRobo. I've recently been tweeting a little bit more often and starting to follow more people. I actually follow Clarice this week. Is it Clarice?
I just
like
did it.
Lord of the Rings? Not Lord of the Rings. Like Silence of the Lambs or Clarice? Which one?
Oh, golly. I got Anthony Hopkins' voice and her name.
Yeah.
Clarice.
And we can do a good impression.
Clarice. It's just K, not CL.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Who did I just start following?
I have no idea.
There is a Clarice 67 for the record, so
Okay, that's...
So, recently I've been kind of getting more active on Twitter, so if somebody has a question about the figures or something, or macros related, or any kind of vintage anime kind of thing from the 80s to 90s, send me a tweet, direct message, or follow me.
Alright. Well, did you give your actual Twitter handle?
Yeah, @GiantRobo.
Okay. And, of course, this is Gwyn Campbell. You can find me on Twitter @GwynCampbell, capital G, capital C. You can also email the cast at speakerpod@gmail.com. And, you know, you can find us hovering around Facebook and whatnot. But, guys, look, thank you very much for your time. I'm sure that Carice is going to give me crap because I mentioned that we were trying to keep this within an hour. We obviously failed to do that, but...
There was a lot this episode, though.
It was a good episode.
That's true.
It had some momentum to it, in my opinion. However, it did have a lack of Machina. And for that, I'm sorry, Mike.
Next week. There's always next week.
The revenge. Revenge of Machina.
Yes.
I just got one question to ask Mike. Now, if Delta just... at some point, like say the next episode, just takes a straight nosedive and just totally just sucks from this point on, and it's just loses all its credibility and they do stupid things, would you still hold a candle for Machina?
Yes.
See what I have to go through with Macross 2? See, you have your Ishtar now. Now, you won't have the same... outcome is me, but if you do, I hope you appreciate. I hope you learn to appreciate what I have to go through for holding the candle, carrying the weight for Macross 2.
Well, I can understand what you're saying, Adrian, but the big difference is Delta doesn't suck.
What's Macross 2?
Oh my god.
The slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Is there anything you'd like to say in reply to that before we fold out?
I'll tell you what Macross 2 doesn't have. Bunch of naked Windirian men. Next time Mike speaks in the background, I want the song It's Raining Men playing all day. Every time Mike comes on the air, it's going to be It's Raining Men.
Why me? It's Raining Men.
I do agree with that, Adrian, and on that note,
yeah, right.
We're folding out. It's raining.